passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
This might be college football heaven. Yeah.
Buck back, third down on the 8. In trouble. Got a block behind him. Gonna throw on a run. Complete to the 25. To the 30. Lindsey's got 35, 40. Lindsey's got 45, 50. 45, 40. Run, Lindsey. 25, 20, 50, 10, 5. Lindsey's got. Lindsey's got. Lindsey's got. I broke my chair. I came right through a chair. A metal steel chair with about a 5-inch cushion. I broke it. Do you know what is going to happen here tonight? And up at St. Simon's and Jekyll Island and all those places where all those dog people have got these condominiums for 4 days. Man, is there going to be some property destroyed tonight? 26 to 21. Dogs on top. We were gone. I gave up. You did too. We were out of it and gone. Miracle.
And we are back to the scene of the crime. 43 years later, the legendary Larry Munson with the great call of all time. We're in, the Gator Bowl's gone, they tore it down. But there's another stadium standing, and we are here for the weekend for dog fans and Gators. Welcome to the program. Roman has joined us. We'll talk to a million people between now and the end of the show, 4 hours from now. But you have to admit, as a Alabama kid, you didn't understand all this, but when you see that, you understand what this rivalry is about.
It does help me kind of form an idea of what this rivalry means. Coming here the last couple years, I
that is to dog fans. What the kick six is to Auburn fans.
That's where you're going, huh? Is that where you're going?
I'm trying to contemporize it.
I didn't need that.
Okay.
I didn't need that. I understood it. I got it. All right. I think it's so unique because this is a rivalry game that where two teams that and universities that genuinely do not like each other all party together. It's this crazy thing where I ride around on my scooter, everybody's drinking, everybody's having a good time. It's freaking golf carts, Polaris is everywhere, music's turned up. It is a great time. It is a party out here, and I'll probably be joining them in the next 25 minutes, Paul.
So back about 6 weeks ago when Billy Napier was stumbling out of the gate, a lot
yes.
of people wondered if he'd make it to
I agree.
The final Saturday in October.
I thought Billy Napier coming into the season was the coach that I was most concerned with about being on the hot seat just because I didn't know the direction where Florida was going to go. You lose a top five quarterback in Anthony Richardson. You bring in Graham Mertz, who was not great at times at Wisconsin, but has really shown a better version of himself. And you got to give Billy Napier credit for that. Them being able to adjust their run game, continue to build out this offense. Florida's way better than what we all thought they were going to be. And Billy Napier deserves a lot of that credit. I mean, if they don't do what they do to this point, we don't think they even have a chance versus Georgia. But you look at it tomorrow, they're going to have a great chance of trying to upset Georgia because Georgia doesn't have Brock Bowers, but they will not. Even though without Brock Bowers, it's going to be a tough matchup, and because of Florida and the way they're playing.
Talking to Roman, let me get to a couple of other. You mentioned Tennessee before we came on. Tennessee
yeah.
came down to Florida. I mean, Gators just ran over them.
They did.
And then we forgot about that. And go, oh, Tennessee's fine. And then they play one half of football against.
Yeah.
And they go to Kentucky tomorrow night. And what's at stake for them?
I think everything for this season as far as it's concerned. You know, Joe Milton played his best half of football in the first half versus Alabama since he played a lackluster Clemson team last year in the bowl game. So besides that, Joe Milton looked like he had kind of figured some things out. Then second half, reality hit and really sunk in. Alabama took over the game, dominated. And from now, I'm looking at, okay, how can Tennessee continue to push this ship forward going on this season? They got to beat Kentucky. It's going to be really, really tough, though, at Kroger Field, at Kroger – I think it's called Kroger Field in Kentucky, Lexington.
Whatever they want to call it.
Yeah, whatever they want to call it. And from there, Kentucky has to be able to find a passing game from somewhere. Devin Leary, whenever you throw it accurately, the wide receivers drop it. Whenever – it's something's off there, and I don't know why, because you have the best running back in the SEC in Ray Davis. But Kentucky should be better as well. They got stomped out versus Georgia. We want to see how they react after taking a bye week, and how can they bounce back? I think Kentucky – has a lot to prove, but Tennessee probably has more to prove. Unfortunately, it's at Kentucky, so I don't know how this thing's going to play out.
Yeah, and for Tennessee, before anybody goes, well, you know, they can still have a great season. They've lost twice.
Yeah.
They have Kentucky tomorrow.
Yes.
They still have to go to Missouri.
Yes.
They still have Georgia.
Yes. I mean, that's 7-5 possibly. And is that what you – from coming off a 10-win season last year, where I was the only one that said that they were going to get 10 wins, I was correct. And then this year coming in and saying that they were going to take a couple steps back, which I was correct. And so that is where Tennessee is right now. It's okay. The program is still trending in the right direction under Coach Heupel. I'm sorry that you just have unreal expectations at times when you win now and all of a sudden you probably win a little bit a year before you thought you were. Maybe you should give more credit to what Hendon Hooker meant to that offense and to that team.
Let's head to College Station tomorrow if you want.
Appreciate it, my brother.
Some people don't want to, but South Carolina has to. And that's a program that, I mean, the season has literally gone up in smoke for them. But talk about smoke signals if South Carolina gets in there and steals a win tomorrow at Kyle Field. What about it?
The smoke signals will be out, and it's not going to be about anything with South Carolina. It's going to be all about Jimbo and Texas A&M. I see what you're going with that, Paul. Texas A&M, it's because at some point, when you accept the check, it comes with responsibility, and people won't return on their investment. And that is not enough. That's not 7 wins a season. You got to be getting 10 wins, 11 wins, 9 wins, competing for the SEC championship. And yes, Texas A&M has been good. They have great players, but the result on the field, for whatever reason, and nobody's going to be able to use the excuse of, well, my quarterback's hurt, or, well, this injury happened to this player, because injuries happen all across the board and nobody cares about them. South Carolina's beat up. They haven't had an offensive line put together with healthy guys since offseason. So,
I mean, they're a 15.5-point favorite.
It shocks me, but it doesn't shock me, because when I looked at this schedule at the beginning of the year, I saw South Carolina.
I think it says South Carolina really is a bad team, which is all the more reason why Gator fans should be happy about that come-from-behind win last week to get out of there alive. They were down 10. The game was over.
10 with 9 minutes to go. There's no way I thought Florida was going to be able to come back and win. But South Carolina is kind of South Carolina, that thing. And South Carolina – beginning of the year, I said they're a team that could win 8 games, but also look at that schedule and they could lose 8 games. And right now they're trending on the opposite side of it. And I would tell them that progress is not always linear, meaning that they're always not going up and down. Sometimes you go sideways. And I think this season has gone sideways for South Carolina. I actually think the quarterback's playing better. I actually think sometimes the defense is playing really good at times, but they're just not playing complete and whole games overall. They also, without having Juice Wells, their top receiver coming through the season, he hasn't played at all. So it's going to be interesting. It's them, Arkansas, firing Dan Enos, another situation.
Oh, I forgot about
that. SEC is having all kinds of situations here. And if I'm Arkansas, I'm telling you right now, if you have a COVID year, come back. Come back and see what we can do when everybody's healthy. We got all the right pieces around us. Sam Pittman, you need to go out there, hire a top-tier offensive coordinator.
Give him a name.
That's future. I don't have that name yet. I don't have it yet.
He needs a name.
He does need a name. I'll have it for you by next week.
Because he really
– I got it.
I mean, Sam's smart.
He is. I can't believe he made that decision to come in and fire his guy on Sunday. That was a big decision.
Well, I mean,
it shows
you he's a good weatherman.
Yes, yes. Great job.
He put his finger up and saw the wind was blowing right in his face. Yeah. And Sam, instead of people saying, Sam maybe ought to fire. Who are you? Oh, Dan, you're out. And by the way, they had to pay Dan something like almost $4 million. He coached 8 games, and they gave this guy a check for $4 million to go home.
That's what we needed to do. The ship was not going to sail the way we were going. I applaud him for coming in and say, all right, it's not this, it's not that. We got to go a totally different direction.
It was cold-blooded.
It was, but it was the right decision.
Well, sometimes you got to do it.
You got to do it as the head man, because it falls down on you first. So I would say this, Arkansas, if you have a COVID year, come back. Let's try and do this next year. I think they would be competitive if all the guys that have that year come back and choose not to forego and go to the league.
Is it crazy to say that Sam Pittman's best move this year was firing a guy he just brought in?
You heard it here first on Paul Feinbaum. Best move by Sam Pittman, firing Dan Enos. This is just what it was.
Second worst move by Sam Pittman, hiring Dan Enos.
Late breaking news right here on the Paul Feinbaum Show. Dan Enos, you got to go, my boy. It's just part of the business.
Are you getting kind of butterflies about LSU coming to your crib next week?
No, I will say this. Alabama fans, great job last week being taken the challenge by Nick Saban, staring him dead in the face and say, we got you, coach. We got your back. Having the team's back, the crowd played an impact in that game, especially late with a couple false start penalties. Take the week off, rest. We going to need you next week at Bryant-Denny. It's got to be loud from quarter one to quarter four because it's going to be a tough one. Tough one next week at Bryant-Denny. It's going to be a lot of points scored too, Paul. But I'm leaning towards the home team.
You are?
Leaning. Just a little bit.
I got no opinion.
I know you talked to Brian Kelly this week, so you're kind of on the other side. It's fine.
No. I will pick the game. Ball. Once I finish with Brian Kelly next week.
Okay. I was like, I know where you're at. It's okay. I know.
Hey, Coach,
I know you're.
Great. Thanks for coming on. Great job. Bama by 7.
Bama by 50. You heard it here first, right here. Paul, I want to know, what did the crowd here, where do you guys stay at when you come to Jacksonville? Because, you know, having the hotel downtown, different feels, different vibes. RV City is the place to be. I guess I need to go to RV City, Paul. I'm missing out.
I am staying. You see this Gator guy right there? I've seen this guy not 10 straight years. I am staying with him.
Oh, you stay with him. All right.
And
I'm hearing Roman Harper should have been a dog. It's okay. I'll let them recruit my son, and he'll be a dog. How about that?
He's 5 years old. right?
7.
7. We'll take a short break. We'll come back. Much more to come. We'll talk to a number of people here this afternoon. Associated
Montel with- Jordan, this is how we do it, baby!
The Paul Feinbaum Show. You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And welcome back. Great to say hello to everybody here in Jacksonville. And it's always such a great thrill to say hello to Greg McGarrity, the former University of Georgia athletic director and now the Gator Bowl president. By the way, I've been meaning to, I'm trying to remember, Mary Jo, I think was her name. She called in, you're her tennis coach. She called last night and wanted to say hello to you.
Well, Marilyn was a great, great player at the University of Georgia and still stay in touch and a wonderful person.
Yeah, I mean, you have such an interesting relationship. You've pretty much done every side of this matchup, haven't you?
Well, I've been very fortunate to spend a lot of time at the University of Georgia, but 18 years at the University of Florida, and all were centered around this game as far as being the representative. So been able to know so many people and get to meet so many dynamic people in this community, and it's certainly helped out now with the Gator Bowl responsibilities.
And let's talk about your, because you have the tax layer bowl at the end of the year, the ACC, SEC matchup, and many other things. And, you know, everything also revolves around this. So it sounds like a really great job compared to what you were doing. It's Can you even imagine that the job that you did for so long now that you're not doing it?
Well, it's a good bit of stress, and I probably did not handle that as well as I should have, and I couldn't control a lot of things, but I worry about everything. But this job certainly has relieved a lot of pressure on that end, but doing a lot of great things in the community, and our staff does a great job. So a lot better for me and our family.
Greg, your former number two, I saw him earlier, Josh Brooks, and he said you look 5 or 10 years younger since you left that quote-unquote rat race. It's never been easy to be an AD, but I'm taking a wild swing here. But today, it seems like it's more complex than ever.
It's totally different than the environment that we grew up in, and it's now kind of professional sports to a certain degree. You got play for pay or whatever you want to call it now, or NIL. You got the transfer portal, but you know, Paul, a lot more good than bad. The bad is really sometimes it pulls you down, but college athletics is still a great enterprise. It helps so many young men and women, and a lot more good than bad.
Yeah, and I think sometimes we all miss that because, you know, we tree chop it here. And often, especially weeks like this when there's major scandals everywhere, it seems like that's all we ever talk about. But, you know, you've done so many different things at so many different levels. And I often wonder how we missed that. And I realize that all the sports are broadcast now on this network and promoted. But I'm curious about, because, you know, being an administrator at Florida and being the head person at Georgia, you saw it all. Explain that. What maybe some of us are missing in the weeds that you lived in.
Well, I think the key thing is really Florida, football provides every resource for your other 20 sports. So football has to be successful. And so the ability to generate revenue, maximize your revenue with football is really critical if you want to make everything work. But it is a huge enterprise, a lot of money involved, a lot of staff. And probably 600 to 700 young people that are trying to get an education and be successful in sports at the same time. But there's a lot of things that go into it, a lot of great people that spend a tremendous amount of time, and thank goodness there's great leadership, not only at the University of Georgia, but great leadership in the Southeastern Conference, too.
And, Greg, so often we talk about the result. We often forget how it all begins, and I think it's important to remember you were the athletic director at the University of Georgia when a really tough decision had to be made about a coach who, quite frankly, was beloved by many, many people and still is. But you decided to make a change with your president and others, and you brought in Kirby Smart. Yep. And I'm assuming you knew exactly what was going to happen.
Well, it's you dream about certain things happening, and Kirby has just done a magnificent job, and his staff. And, you know, ironically, Coach Rick was honored today, induction into the Georgia-Florida Hall of Fame, and we got to speak a good bit before the game. But I love that man. He's a tremendous individual, and I just think the world of him. But, you know, he's in a good place now, and so is Kirby in Georgia. So it all worked out pretty well.
When you're making the decision to bring in Kirby, clearly, it was the right decision, but so many of these decisions are not. I mean, how do you? That's the biggest part of college athletics that people don't understand. What goes into you? You know he's capable, but so are a lot of other people who don't make it.
Well, you've seen a lot of hires that you would think would be no-brainers that don't work out, and every athletic director doesn't bat 1,000. But you just knew that from, you know, if you studied Kirby's career and his mentors and the way he approached things and the way he was a student at the University of Georgia, not only a great student, but a great player. But he also had a class with our president, too. So there was when you're meeting with people, you didn't have to ask what they're all about and what they've done. You knew everything about it, so it was all focused on what do you need to do to excel at the highest levels.
And as you watch from some distance, not much, but I mean, you're still you're still close friends with so many people. What are your thoughts on this incredible run that you played such a critical part and role in developing?
Well, first of all, you've got to recruit, and Kirby is so committed to recruiting. But not only when you get them on campus, you have to develop them. And I think a testimony to Kirby's leadership is not a lot of kids transfer out of the program. And I think they enjoy that environment. But I think those are things, the intangibles, I just think some of those things come into play. And I'm just so glad that the alumni of the University of Georgia have embraced Kirby, and he's certainly exceeded expectations.
Greg, in closing, I want to say something very personal here, because I've done this a very long time, and you sat in those AD meetings when probably my name came up. And I've had issues with almost everyone imaginable, but the one group that I probably had the most difficulty with in my career are the spouses of coaches and athletic directors. You're the exception of that. Your wife, Cheryl, we met through you a couple of years ago, and I cried when you retired, because I lost one of the few supporters I had left in those big meetings.
Well, she is a tremendous supporter, and anybody that could put up with me for 40-some-odd years is a saint. But she has a lot of respect for you and what you do and how you manage things, and be able to go on this platform and talk about sports for 3 or 4 hours a day is just magnificent. So a lot of mutual admiration there, but she really, really thinks highly of you.
Well, Cheryl is one of the really special people I have met, and I love her dearly, and thank you for allowing her to speak to me, because some other ADs probably would have said, stay away from that guy. Greg McGarrity, thanks so much. All the best. You look great.
And, my pleasure.
So happy.
Thank you.
We will take a break. We got a really special guest coming up. I think you're going to have a lot of fun with our next guest. We are coming back. We're live in Jacksonville.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
So it all begins tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. with Marty and McGee, and then 10 a.m. right here outside the stadium in Jacksonville, SEC Nation. And we're back. A number of guests will continue to drop by. We'll do a whip around to some of the big games of the weekend. Cole Kubik joining us in just a few minutes. And let us check in with Smitty first. Hey, Smitty.
Paul, welcome to Florida.
Thank you very much.
Since you opened with Larry Munson's call of Georgia's miraculous win in the bowl there, I thought it might be appropriate to bring a little Larry Munson story that very few people know. Larry was a casual friend of mine when he broadcast in Nashville. And few people know that he was at one time barred from the air for an unspeakable mic violation. He was calling the Nashville baseball games down in the old Sulphur Dell, and one hot July or August night, it was probably 100 degrees in the broadcast booth and maybe 115 at home plate. And he glanced down during the break at the catcher putting on the tools of ignorance and turned to his engineer thinking he was off the air. and said, that is a blankety-blank, blankety-blank, blankety-blank way
yeah,
of,
you know,
of making a living.
Schmitty, I hate to interrupt, but thank you very much. That's a great. I've heard that. That story is amazing, and I wish I had more time to go into it, but it is part of the lore. But let me say hello to Montel Jordan, who joins us. What a pleasure to meet you.
Honored to be here, man. Thank you so much.
Well, I'll try not to just sound like everybody who runs into you and say, hey, I heard your song way back when, but because you had so much. But you had literally one of the biggest songs of the 90s, and I want to talk about how you came up with This Is How We Do It, because it's, you can go anywhere today, whether it's a dance, after a wedding, and they're still playing it. It was only number one for 7 weeks in a row. You became globally famous as a result, and you're still living with it.
Yeah. Well, I got kids in college, so hey, I need a song to stay successful. No, the beautiful thing, I think the song comes about because everybody has a different way of doing something. And so just connecting with people at that time, 1995, when the song came out, it was just a really, really cool way. And I kind of reinvented it throughout the years so that whether it was at a football game, this is how we do it, at a basketball game, whatever, this is how we do it. And it just kind of reinvents itself.
Yeah. And Montel, I've talked to various artists over the years, and sometimes they'll say, I didn't even think it was a good song. Sometimes they'll say, I knew it was going to be a hit. It's not always. When you finished it, did you think it was going to?
Paul, we knew it was something special, because at the time when I came out in 95, a lot of music was, a lot of hip hop and R&B was sampling songs. And so the original song that was sampled was from a mentor of mine, Slick Rick the Ruler, who had a song called Children's Story. And so the song was already a hit.
Okay.
It was then taking something that was already a hit and then kind of repurposing it and turning it into a classic.
Which is even more remarkable.
Because
that has been tried.
It has been tried and been failed. So, yeah, we came out with a winner, and now the song is probably almost 30 years old. So.
And I mean, I know that you've done so much since then. I want to talk about what you're currently doing.
Yeah.
But does it ever get old when somebody stops you on a plane or an airport or anywhere and say, hey, when I first heard it, this is what it meant to me?
I think it's a blessing, man. Like, for me, it's cool that even when people didn't know my name, they kind of knew the song, and it was like, oh, this is how we do it. So for the longest time, the song even allowed me to have access into places, even just to be here at SEC. It's almost like the song wasn't just on radio. It wasn't just in clubs. The song has been in stadiums. It's been, you know, in so many different places. It's a stadium anthem. And so what a cool.
Not to harp on it, but of course I am. But take me through that for a second. And I'm sure there's a couple of those moments, and they may not have been the biggest moments in terms of what the average person would think. But moments when that has happened, when you have heard it, and you go, man.
Yeah.
If they could see me now.
Well, I think one of the keys to, I don't think I've ever told this story, but one of the keys to why the song was so big was because it was customizable. In other words, I came out of Los Angeles, South Central Los Angeles, and when I would say, you know, South Central does it like nobody does, you know, then I'm touring, I go to New York, and New York is like, we're not playing that. We're not playing South Central. And so I had to go into the radio and say, New York does it like nobody does. The Jaguars do it like none. The Cowboys do it like none. So the song became customizable. You say, the Bulldogs do it like nobody does. Okay. Yeah. And then you got to know your audience, too. So
I mean, I've always wondered about that, because I've seen there's certain songs, really famous songs. I think it's a Journey song from the 70s where it talks about South Detroit. Now, when you're in Houston, why don't you put Houston in there?
Yeah.
I mean, I've never understood that, while artists are stuck on what they were thinking when they were writing the song as opposed to where they are doing a live show.
Yeah, well, that's been, like I said, that's been almost a calling card for me, that every place I go, I customize the song to be what it needs to be for that space and time. And I think that's part of the longevity of not just it being a great song, but also being something that can be, you know, can be purposed and repurposed time and time again.
I ask this question because it leads to what you're doing now, because sometimes you have a number one hit and it changes your life, and then 10 years later, you're going, well, I spiraled out of control, and and now I'm trying to come up. What did it do to you to help open the door to what you're doing now, which is amazing? And when you talk about your work with your wife, with helping people, mentoring people, and helping lead people to better lives.
Yeah, well, the way the song becomes the calling card, it's access into places where people of high profile personality need help. So, for instance, I know lots of athletes, lots of educators, lots of entrepreneurs, lots of executives need help with their families. My wife and I, we do marriage ministry together. So basically, we have a place called the Jordan River where we want to help public marriages heal in private. And so the music basically.
Can I get your card before you go?
Oh, I got you. Listen, we got you. But yeah, people can look that up, because family legacy is what's pretty important. We're taught, you know, even the world of athletics, people are taught how to use their gift, how to use their skill set, and not necessarily groomed in how to be a good husband or how to be a good father, a good mother, a good parent. And so we come in to help keep family and family legacy together.
Okay, I've been married 32 years, so I'll act like I'm somebody really famous and going through a breakup. Help me. A lot of people out there are hurting, and I want you to talk to them. And they may not be well known. They may just be great people who just can't deal with the pressures of supporting someone. What would you say?
Well, after 32 years, there's more invested. Yeah. In that time.
Invest is the key.
And I think when people understand that, when people understand the difference between spending time and investing time, you didn't spend 32 years. There had to be some investment stuff that was there. And if you want to just go that route, investments go up and down, but it's the over time that if you pull that out ahead of time, you can lose everything.
Right.
And so I think just in the process of understanding that marriage and family, all those different things are worth fighting for. We believe it's worth fighting for. And so
Montel, when I've always wondered about people that help other people, what do they do when they need some help?
That is a great question. We've wanted to be that, to answer that question. You know, when you're at the top of your field, when you're the guy that signs the checks or the girl that signs the checks, when you're that person, where do they go? We want to be that. We want to be that space. We want to be that that non-disclosure safe space where we're curating, you know, a place where people can really get reconnected, not just to each other, but to the one that made them. And I think a lot of times for us, it's our faith walk that helps us fully be able to reconnect that if I can be reconnected to the one that created me, I can be better to the person, you know, that is beside me. And so, yeah.
In terms of dealing with high profile, because we glamorize everything.
Sure.
It doesn't matter who you are. Whether you're Jay-Z and Beyonce or Taylor Swift and the tight end, but for those people, they're in a fishbowl. But a lot of people aren't, and they're still struggling. What do you say to the rest of us who don't have the mansions and don't have the number one records, who are with someone for all the right reasons but can't make it work?
I think pain is pain. I think that experience, whether you got $1 million or $2, it's going to be, you know, I know multimillionaires who are miserable.
Sure.
And I know people that, you know, I think what it comes down to is that you can be the wealthiest person in the world if you don't have some type of spiritual grounding.
So
you
faith
can be spiritually
is
bankrupt.
At the epicenter.
Oh, no question. No question. Anything my wife and I can give to a person, we can give tools, we can give strategies, we can get everything, but outside of faith, all those things are just humanly trying to make something work. And I didn't create me, you know, someone created God. I believe God created my wife, and so for me to be able to know her better, I got to go to the manufacturer to be able to understand things about her that I could never know, you know, on my own. Have you ever seen when someone will say,
that one before.
Well, people will say, why didn't you ask me this? Why didn't you ask me that? And the person will say, I shouldn't have to ask. And I believe that. I really believe that before my wife was my wife, my wife was God's daughter first. And so I go to my wife's father first to be able to say, hey, tell me stuff about your daughter that I might not even know for myself. And so, yeah, it's a spiritual connection. It's a faith walk, and it's something we believe in, and it's something that has worked.
Finally, I can't imagine there's anything quite like being a star, singing your song, having people. But in terms of reward, is what you're doing now, does that surpass standing out there on the stage with the bright lights shining down and you doing your songs?
I have been on some of the largest platforms in the world. The same way Super Bowl champions and championship players can be on the most high-profile stages with rings and trophies. For me, when I can look at a husband and I can look at a wife that says, we're going to stay in this for not just for ourselves, not just for our kids, but for our family legacy. We're going to stay in this to show that, that God is real. Those things for me weigh far more than having number one records and selling and having material possessions. That's the thing that makes me get up in the morning.
Who thought that's what you were going to get by coming down here to Jacksonville today?
Who'd have thunk, right? You know, you get good music and you get some hope.
Montel, what a pleasure. This has been truly inspirational to spend some time with you.
Thank you so much. It's an honor, and I love what you do.
Thank you. Montel Jordan.
What's up?
This is how we do it. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
We're back live in Jacksonville. We are going to bounce around the SEC right now. Cole Kubelik in Oxford, Vanderbilt coming to town. Cole, thanks for the time. Let's talk about Ole Miss because people are looking toward LSU Alabama as the be-all, end-all, but Ole Miss, a challenging road, but what do you make out of this team, and what shot do you give them of making a lot of noise the rest of the way?
I actually give them a pretty good shot of making some of that noise, Paul, because I believe before the season, when we looked at this stretch that Ole Miss has ahead of them right now, we thought, well, the depth isn't really there. Will they be beat up? The amount of offensive plays they're probably going to have run. Not really sure they'll be ready for what they have in the last quarter of the season, and it worked a little bit in reverse. This team was beat up early. Now Zachary Franklin is healthy. Caden Prethcorn is healthy. You got Trey Evans, who's healthy as well. So you're going to roll into this back half of the schedule maybe as close to 100% that this team has been all season. I think you're going to see more and more Ulysses Bentley, maybe give Quinshon Judkins a little bit of a break throughout the course of games. And I think that with the way they manage this offense, the playmaker that Jackson Dart is becoming, when he's off platform, when he's outside the pocket, keeping his eyes downfield, the design run plays that they also have with him, and this group of wide receivers that now looks like it's closer to 100% than it's been all season, Paul, on top of an improved defense that Pete Golding's throwing out there each and every week, I think Ole Miss can be a dangerous team down the stretch.
Cole Kubelik joining us from Oxford. Cole, let me get some thoughts about where we are here. And Florida playing better, but where are their wins? They have the win over Tennessee here, of course, in Gainesville, but they came from behind against South Carolina, a very pedestrian team this year. What do they need to do tomorrow?
Well, they got to get that run game going first and foremost. ATN and Montrell Johnson have to get going. The stretch play needs to get that Georgia defense running sideline to sideline. That potentially could open up a few more north-south runs where you can go right at that defense, and then play action's got to be something that they utilize, whether that's deep shots down the field. And that's the big problem for Florida is they just don't have a lot of those weapons on the perimeter that we're used to seeing Gator teams have that can create those explosive plays outside of Ricky Pearsall. But I think they do a good job moving him around, finding different ways to force feed him the football. You'll see him come on a jet sweep and they'll turn and throw it to him, kind of an extension of the run game. He can turn that into an explosive play. But the bootlegs, the play actions, the misdirection plays that will come off of those initial runs, they all have to be there for that offense to get going on all cylinders. And Graham Mertz is really running it in a very effective manner. The difference will be the defense. I like the way that Austin Armstrong coaches it. They can be aggressive. I think they will attack, but do they have the personnel to match up across the board with everything that Georgia's going to throw at you? And I understand there's no Brock Bowers, but Paul, that is a deep list of playmakers that Mike Bobo is still able to go choose from of who he wants Carson Beck to deliver the football to. So I think Florida keeps it competitive. I do think they find some success in this game, but I think Georgia ends up walks away from a win there in Jacksonville.
And Cole, a couple of seconds left. What do you expect Mike Bobo to throw up there to make up for the lack of Bowers?
Well, I think you'll probably see less 12 personnel, which is one back, two tight end sets, more wide receiver sets, probably more pre-snap motion to try to get what the defense is going to show you. Not with tight ends, though, with different receivers. You've got Dominic Lovett in the slot. You've got Rob Thomas on the outside. Rosemary Jack Saints had some good games where they can force feed him the football a little bit. And I really think they have finally found in Daywon Edwards the running back that they want to feature. Now, that offensive line's been a little bit inconsistent, not the same level we've seen the past couple of seasons, but they're going to lean on the run first, and they're going to try to see how Austin Armstrong's defense is going to play them. They got to deal with big Cam Jackson up front at nose guard. He's been exceptional for the Gators this year. I think it'll be a balanced attack, not necessarily going to have too many targets or too many rushes by one individual player. They'll spread it around and just see if they can get that Florida defense to loosen up a little bit.
Cole Kublik on the call tomorrow night for Vanderbilt heading in to Ole Miss. Thank you very much, Cole. Always great to see you on these Friday afternoon. What a first hour we have had, highlighted by Montel. We had Greg McGarrity, Roman. Next hour, we will see. We'll head to A&M, Kentucky, just for starters. Jordan will drop by. The athletic director at the University of Georgia, Josh Brooks, will also be here. We'll take a short break. We'll also include your phone calls a little bit as we work our way through the afternoon live here in Jacksonville.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.